When someone in your family is going through depression, it's hard to know what to say, and I said everything wrong. I'm Sam. Our family went through it, and I just kept saying, come on, let's get it together. The thing I should have been saying is, let's get you to the center, a place of hope. It's a place for you or a place for someone you love who's struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, eating disorders. So many success stories. It's personal to me. They've actually saved the lives of people I love. If you felt like, I don't know what to do to dig out of this really dark place, and you've tried everything and you can't think of what to do next, make a phone call right now. Call the Center, a Place of Hope.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the Center, a Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.
Welcome to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. And on behalf of our hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help AACC equip the church and provide Christian mental health care to those in need, visit AACCFoundation.org to donate. Your gift will ensure that this program and your station remain on the air. Now, let's join our host, Dr. Tim Clinton.
Joining us now is Dr. Meg Meeker, a practicing pediatrician, leading global expert on parent-child relationships. She's been featured on National Public Radio, Fox and Friends, Oprah Radio, Psychology Today, and more. Written numerous books, including one of my favorites, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and 10 Habits of Happy Mothers. She also hosts a podcast called Parenting Great Kids. Dr. Meeker, welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family. What a delight to have you.
You bet. So happy to be with you, Tim.
Hey, Meg, as we get started, you know, in the media, dads always get a bad rap. You and I have talked a lot about that, but, you know, buffoons, disengaged, non-emotional, absent. Yet, what's interesting, it's one of your favorite subjects. Meg, how did you ever get interested in dads?
I want to say by accident, or I want to say God really threw it into my lap. Here's how I got interested. You know, I've been practicing pediatrics for over 30 years now, so I've listened to thousands of kids. And I found that the kids who had their fathers come in with them, whether it was anxiety, depression, eating disorder, no matter what, they did better. And what I was also seeing as in our culture, dads were being bashed to pieces. And yet what I was seeing in real life was that kids who had even a dad present coming in with them did really, really well. So I started investigating it, this sort of saying, okay, what's going on in our culture? And then investigating what are the real scientific, what does the science show about the father effect on kids? And there was an enormous disconnect. And that's when I stepped into that space and said, I'm going to do something about this.
You know, one of my favorite books is your Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters book. Meg, I've recommended it to so many people. I mean, especially in the sports arena. A lot of those guys up there trying to figure out how to get connected with their kids and especially their daughters. And, you know, dads struggle a little bit in that area, especially when they hit puberty or whatever. But talk to us about what you've learned about dads and daughters.
You know, first of all, my Strong Father, Strong Daughter book, I really wrote it as a means to allow fathers to see what their girls thought about them, how they felt towards them, and what they wanted from them. And I believe that if a dad could sit behind his daughter's eyes for just a few moments, his life would change. What I found out is that daughters look up to their dads as the strong person, the protector, the one they can trust to keep them safe from the minute they're born. And as a daughter gets older, you know, into early elementary school years, she looks to her dad in the same way, but even more amplified. My dad is the one who's going to make sure I'm okay. My dad is the one who's the smartest, strongest man I've ever known. My dad is the one who's better than anybody else's dad out there. And then as they move into the preteen and teen years, girls, believe it or not, still look to their dads to be an example for how a man, boyfriend, teacher, brother should treat them. And even though teen girls, preteen girls get very awkward towards their dads, daughters need their dads during that time of their life more than ever. And this is right when dads start to pull back. And I say to dads, don't pull back. Advance towards your daughter in a very gentle way.
What's interesting too, Meg, is in your research, you found some pretty powerful statistics, research related to that father-daughter relationship. Like, for example, dad influences whether or not she's going to be sexually active. That's a big time deal. You know that?
Yeah, it's a very big time deal. And particularly now when there's so much confusion around gender identity and this kind of a thing, the bottom line is the dad has an enormous effect on how a girl perceives herself sexually from a self-esteem standpoint. And studies show that if a daughter believes her father doesn't want her to be sexually active, even though he never says so, she is more likely to postpone sexual activity. In other words, a daughter reads what her dad thinks about her, and she follows that. She follows her perceptions of how her father feels because she wants to please her father. We also know, and this is really interesting, Tim, that daughters who have a father living in the home with them start their periods later in general. Which is fascinating that a good father actually has an effect on physiology in his daughter. We don't know why that is, but we know that it is.
Amazing. And Meg, in that relationship, if they have this close bond, she is much more confident as a person, probably feels much more worthy of being loved, and is stronger in her female identity. I've seen things where they're less susceptible to mental health issues, substance abuse, peer pressure, and they're even smarter in school. I mean, are you finding the same thing?
Absolutely. You know, studies even show that if a father reads to his daughter first year of life, and they test her IQ when she's young, and then they test it a few years later, the daughters who had their fathers read to them early in life actually test higher on an IQ test than daughters whose father didn't read to them. I don't know if it's related to the time, to the facial interaction. It doesn't matter, really, because all we know is that a father spending time with his daughter has an enormous impact, not just on her IQ, but on her self-esteem, what she believes about herself. It has an important impact on depression, anxiety, school attendance, whether or not she finishes school, goes on to high school and college, and even professional schools. A good dad makes a huge difference in all aspects of a daughter's life, not just physically, physiologically, intellectually, but emotionally.
Meg, we'll turn this upside down on its head now, and the whole issue of fatherlessness. We know it's probably our greatest social ill. We know that the absence of dad, I'll say godly dads from the home, is an absolute disaster. And so in the midst of that, this father thirst, father hunger piece that we see in the literature a lot is a big time issue. I mean, when you don't have the love or affirmation or the blessing of your father, It can be not just emotionally dysregulating. It can lead to a lot of chaos, and you can wind up looking for the arms of your father in a lot of broken ways, can't you?
That's exactly what we're finding right now. You know, what we used to see is girls who didn't have a strong attachment to their father or a sense that they're loved by the father would gravitate towards the creepy guys. I don't know how else to say it. But now what we're finding is they're going towards another substitute, and that is social media. Because in social media, they can be any girl they feel a guy would desire. And so it's one step removed from even the authenticity of a relationship with a guy who's a ne'er-do-well. It's now a fake relationship with a guy she thinks she's communicating with. And that, of course, is much more devastating on many different levels. So a girl who doesn't have a strong attachment to her dad, which she's born for, we're all born for connection and relationship. It's like you sort of gutted her, if you will. I don't know how else to describe what I see in girls who don't have a dad around. They feel gutted. And one of the most disturbing things to me as a female professional in our culture is that many women like me are communicating to men in our culture, we don't need you. We've got it covered. We can give our daughters everything they need. We understand them. We're just like them. You know, we've lived their lives. Nothing could be further from the truth. And we're doing an enormous disservice as women to our children, not just to men, by pushing them out of the home and making them what I call orbit the home. If they are in the home, they're just sort of peripheral.
Meg, I also want to shift our conversation for a moment over to, we're talking fathers and daughters. What about mothers and sons? And that here we are, this cross-sex connection. But talk to us about mothers and sons, what you've learned.
Sure. You know, I wrote Strong Mothers, Strong Sons, probably selfishly because I had a son and I was concerned about what messages he was getting in our culture when he was pre-pubertal and then into the teen years, because this is when all the anti-male stuff really got going. So many single mothers and so many married mothers do the bulk of child rearing. And when it comes to sons, that can be tricky. A, mothers feel they don't understand their sons, because many times we don't. And they assume that their sons' needs are like their daughter's needs. They're not. There are critical differences in parenting, for mother parenting sons and daughters. For instance, mothers need to understand that a mother gives a son a lot of security in the first 7-8 years of life. She's the one who's there. She's the nurturer. She's the one who hugs. You know, dad may be away. But as he enters adolescence, there's a psychological shift that goes on in a young boy, which is, gee whiz, I'm changing. I'm becoming a guy. Having my mom meet these needs feels a little weird and a little creepy. And then he goes into full-blown teen years. And the sense that he has to depend on his mother doesn't feel right to him. And he wants to get away. He wants to sort of be set free, if you will. He needs to find his way as a man. And the way a boy finds his way as a man is by watching and connecting with other good men. But many mothers don't sit well with this. They don't like it. They want to grab onto their sons. They want to keep meeting the kid's needs. They want to make sure that the kid is okay, that he's not getting bullied. This is very harmful to boys, because boys need to separate from their mothers physically and psychologically. And a lot of mothers, particularly single mothers, really resist this. And I really think to a large degree, this is why we're seeing some boys in their 20s who really don't want to separate. They don't want to leave the home. They feel they need to protect mom. They feel that mom needs them and mom's communicating she needs them. So there's these mother-son dynamics that are very unique to the mother-son relationship that mothers need to understand in order to raise strong young men.
Meg, in that piece, it's interesting. I interviewed Warren Farrell recently. He wrote the book Boys in Crisis, and he was talking about how he had learned that roughhousing and that kind of parenting coming from a dad is so critical for children, especially boys. They need that kind of wiring. And so when you think about wanting to protect them, that mother-son relationship, and nurture them, you hear what I'm saying? There's some dynamics here that you're talking about. I think you're referencing those kind of things that we've got to get, we've got to press into. What do you say to the single parent mom? Because a lot of these moms out there who are carrying the shoulder of a mom dad responsibility, it's a real burden. And no matter what, she can't be a dad mom to her son. You hear what I'm saying? Or her daughter? Yeah, they need a dad and that male influence. Dial that piece in, because somehow this mother son bond is really special. It is. I know, even with my own wife Julie and our son, Zach, they have a special relationship together. It's unique, and it's powerful, by the way, and they lock in. He, at the same time, is very masculine. He's a tough kid. He's a three-sport athlete. He likes to throw down. He likes to get after it. That's nurtured along, and I know Julie, I mean, who wasn't really athletic or outdoorsy, she learned that. I mean, she got to the games. She could spit seeds with the best of them now, and she can chew out an umpire no problem at all. She's in the game, but those dynamics, Meg, that's what we're talking about. These are important pieces.
Very, very important pieces. And I could tell you what she did right. I don't know her. I know you. But just from what you're saying, what you're describing, she allowed Zach to pull away and find his way as a young man. She didn't inhibit that. And a mother's natural instincts, particularly with a single mom, is to inhibit that, because you feel it threatens the intimacy of your relationship, which it does. It threatens the bad part of your relationship. And what mothers need to realize is, A, boys bond to other people by being physical. You know, that's sort of their love language. I look at my son, who's 32, and he gets together with his cousin, who's 32, and within 15 minutes, somebody's on the ground. They're big, strapping men, but that's how they show love to one another. My son would never do that with me. So that physical aspect of that relationship with a young man is very, very important. Mothers don't have that, so we need to realize that. There's that sort of working out of, I sort of say, the little testosterone needs to meet the big testosterone. And this is why I think a lot of teenage boys are out of control who don't have a dad. Mom simply can't be the brick wall that he runs into. He'll motor his mother over. I see this over and over again. There are single moms who are actually afraid of their teenage boys who are angry and out of control. But here's a classic example of how a dad can get that son under control. It's a man-to-man challenge. You have to expose your son to good men. A coach, a pastor, a youth pastor, a teacher. For several reasons. Look at how that man treats other people. You know, create a picture in your mind of how a good man talks and acts and walks and treats people, and have as much interaction with that man as possible. I worked with some of the NFL players for a number of years, and I'll never forget one of the men said, "I always wanted a dad at home. I never had a dad. But I would go to my friend's house, and there was a dad there, and we would all eat dinner together, and the dad would sit at the table and talk, and the whole family would converse." And he said in his mind, "One day I will have this." And of course he did. In other words, just seeing how a good dad behaved in a family context was enough for him to reproduce it later. That's powerful stuff.
Meg, this issue of parenting, what an opportunity, yet what a responsibility. And as I think about moms and dads out there, keep plowing dirt, keep going, because what you do does matter. At the end of the day, the heart of it, though, Meg, comes back to not just do I have authority, do I tell my kids to do the right things? It's really about, do I have a relationship with my son and or daughter? I mean, are we wired in together? Because that's really the piece here, Meg, that drives everything.
It's what we're born for. You know, if you don't have a healthy relationship in your life, a person feels, why should I be alive? I can have my work. I can make a lot of money. I can do this, but nothing matters. And you will never have peace in your life if you don't have a relationship with God and a relationship with a close family member, i.e. a parent. And it's really what makes you get up in the morning and work hard during the day. And the parent-child relationship is so critical to the child. And I think that as parents, we get so wound up in what we want during the day and what we want to do and what we feel we deserve that we tend not to focus on our kids and go, okay, what do they need today? I'm talking about being present in a strong and healthy manner for your kids consistently. And that's what makes great kids turn into great adults.
And that relationship changes over time. Yeah, I think about our children, Megan and Zach, are grown now. And we were talking about Julie a moment ago. And Julie and Megan are so close as friends, too. You hear what I'm saying? And Julie and Zach are friends. They are. And they would all throw down together. I mean, they would fight for each other. It's that bonding piece. And again, not easily done. It takes time and effort every day. I guess that's why they call it parenting. And what's interesting is it goes from the cradle to the grave, Meg. It never stops. So that's the beauty here.
And I tell dads, your kids, particularly your daughters, will take one man to your grave. One. It's their dad. Because you either want more time or you want more healing. And that's profound, but it's true. And I learned that by interviewing hundreds of women from my book, is that they either gushed about their dads or they burst into tears when I asked them about their fathers. And these are women that are in their 40s and 50s and 60s. You know, dad is that primary male attachment in your life. And that's why it's so critical to maintain and develop that and grow as they get older.
I wanted to ask you, if you wouldn't mind, just tell us a little bit about your 30-day challenge to help strengthen dads, for example. And you also, I know, do a lot of dad coaching. Where can people learn more about you? How can they get in contact with you?
Yeah. If they go to meekerparenting.com, they can either sign up for individual coaching or group coaching. And my 30-day challenge is fun. It's easy. You know, I give dads one little thing to do every day. And again, I did it because here's what I believe. It's never too late for any dad to work on his relationship with his daughter because his daughter wants it, even if she's an adult, even an older adult. And every dad is wired with everything he needs to be a better and a really good dad. And he just needs to know that, and he needs to believe in that, and he needs to just dive into that and move forward.
I don't know where you're at, Dad, what you're going through, but I know this. It's never too late to make a decision to become a good dad. And whatever time or breath God's given to you, boy, lock in there and ask him for the strength to help you do it. Always great to have you, Meg, on broadcast, and can't wait to have you back. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for letting me be here.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
If someone in your family has depression or anxiety, it's hard to know what to do. We went through that. I'm Sam. The center is a place of hope. Lives are being healed. God is changing families.
Coming to the center it's just life altering. My relationship with my husband, my relationship with my family.
Struggling to keep it all together, or no one knows, or you're hiding things, or you feel like you've hit some crisis.
It's amazing to think that there could be so much change.
Man, I am so grateful for The Center. It's so helpful for me, and I'm so hopeful.
The Center, a place of hope. Call today. A lot of people are surprised that insurance can help cover this.
Dive in, give yourself all to it. Watch what happens.
Call The Center, a place of hope, right now.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for The Center, a place of hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at The Center, a place of hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.